Well, I'm delighted to say that joining me on the Godcast today is Julie Campbell, who is perhaps better known in the music industry as Lonely the Lone Lady. Julie, you're from Manchester and you've been in the industry for many years, and it's a real pleasure to get you on the Godcast. How are you today?
Yeah, good, thanks. I'm just, I'm sort of recovering and reflecting on a year really of touring and kind of 18 months of really focused activity and promotion, and then it's all just kind of come to a halt now, so it's quite a gear change. So I've just spent a week on my sofa just going, what, you know,
this and
strange transitional phase at the moment.
Yeah, are you pleased how the album was received and how things have gone on tour?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's been like so many high points, really. I mean, it was amazing to, you know, play on Jules Holland. That was a real high point. You know, the BBC crew came and filmed in this. You know, I was asked to select a site that had meaning for me. So I chose like a mill in East Manchester. And they made a really beautiful film out of it. And, you know, that's just an amazing document for me to have. You know, there's so many high points. I really enjoyed touring. I kind of put a new band together from scratch. Had to sort of, it's a funny thing, once you finish the record, I then had to pull it all apart again to figure out how to play it live. So I kind of developed a whole new setup, really, starting with a sort of bespoke electronic drum kit. I've really enjoyed playing live. So it's been great. You know, it's been a great, exhausting, you know, wonderful time.
Just tell us, Julie, how the approach came from later. Music fans will know it anyway, but does that come through the management, or did you know Jules in any way, or?
No, I didn't know him at all. I think one of the show's producers heard There Is No Logic on Six Music, and then we were invited to film a rehearsal, which was really funny because when we did that, the three of us, James Field, Kendra Frost and me, had only been in a room together for about 3 days by that point. We'd only just rehearsed together, and it was a new band, and I didn't know how the dynamics would be. And so when we recorded the rehearsal, you know, we were really flying by the seat of our pants, really. But that video did the trick, and then so that led to us being invited to, you know, make a proper appearance.
Who was on the show with you?
Well, I think I've got Six Music maybe to thank for that, because they're so supportive and they play my singles all the time, really. So they've definitely played a part in that.
Yeah. I rudely interrupted you, Julie. Who was on the show with you?
Damon Albarn and some other people. I'm afraid, you know, my vanity and ego means I can't even really remember who else was on, because I was so excited and delighted to be on there myself.
I think listening to lots of interviews, one of the opening questions is kind of how was it during the pandemic? But just to maybe stretch that out a bit, was it a time of creativity for you, or was it kind of down tools? Just tell us about that period.
Well, the pandemic made very little difference to my day-to-day life, because when I'm in the writing phase, I spend most of my time alone anyway, just working on music. And it was really strange for me to hear people talk about how the pandemic affected them, because it seemed like everyone had to live more like an artist at that point, you know. And in a funny way, I think as an artist, you perhaps have the tools to better deal with something like that, because I'm so used to spending all my time at home alone, working from home, you know, that's what I do. And, you know, financial uncertainty is the norm for me. So it actually helped me, because I really, you know, it was a real struggle getting the album to the finish line. And the pandemic meant that the outside world just calmed down and everything went really quiet and that really helped me get my album finish line. And I really enjoyed the kind of weird, the sort of simplicity and the sort of monkishness of it when in proper deep lockdown, when you were only allowed out for one walk a day. I kind of loved the simplicity and the ritual of that. And, you know, I did some really good walks around, particularly East and North Manchester, places that I'd sort of known all my life, but hadn't, you know, fully explored. So for me, it was a very sort of helpful time.
Yeah. And I was going to ask if Manchester was still on, but you've answered that by suggesting your walks around Manchester. I was, you know, I've been listening to your music quite a lot over the last month or so, and you know, it seems to me that you're influenced by the landscape around you. I was kind of wondering, because I used to work in Manchester Ancoats probably about 15 years ago, and I remember driving in, and it was when the regeneration was just going, and a lot of the mills and the old sites there were kind of either derelict or they were being ripped open. Is Manchester, I was wondering if you still feel that Manchester is a, you know, a real hive of inspiration for your writing, or has it been regenerated beyond that now?
I think it has. I mean, even when I was writing Hinterland, which is my second album that really dives deep into the ideas around psychogeography, a lot of that was in my head, you know. And really, I was just looking at fragments and ruins and building a new sort of imaginary world from that, really. And a lot of what I write about is, it's very sort of, you can only write about what you know, really. And, you know, this is my home. I think, you know, Manchester's experienced, I think it's the city in Europe that's experiencing the biggest building boom in Europe, I think, at the minute. So honestly, I just feel like Manchester is like a property portfolio for, you know, landlords and developers. It's pretty vulgar. But, you know, artists always find a way. So artists, you know, like, you know, studios and grassroots, like art studios and rehearsal spaces get pushed further out to the outskirts. So, you know, we artists always survive.
So which outskirts did you go to, Julie? I'm interested to know where, you know, where you were drawn to.
Yeah, well, I spent a lot of time in Ancoats and particularly Miles Platting. I mean, I recorded my first album, Nerve Up, in a mill in Miles Platting that was quite empty and derelict at the time and has since been sort of, you know, regenerated. So, yeah, mainly Ancoats, Miles Platting. And then, I mean, I grew up in Audenshaw, so there's a real pull towards East Manchester, back out through Openshaw, Droylsden, Gorton, you know, bits of North Manchester, but yeah, very, very much focused around Miles Platting, actually.
Yeah. Now this is the Godcast, Julie, so I suppose I've got to ask some sort of religious concept in the question. I was wondering if you have found churches or built church buildings as a source of inspiration for writing, or do they intrigue you? We have a couple of derelict churches in East Lancashire, and you know, I'm not a writer in a musical sense, so but it does leave me wondering, you know, if there is a niche there for someone.
Yeah, I imagine so. I mean, I think a lot of my, like, the imagery around former things, like the sleeve art, was drawing on sort of medieval imagery. And I, in particular, the film Seventh Seal by Ingmar Bergman really had a big impact on me. And I think all these things are just a bundle of, the medieval imagery I like is to do with existentialism, and you know, that is something that is a big runs through my lyrics, actually. You know, I don't whatever that sort of magic sort of quality is that faith is. I know that I don't have it. I wish I did. But I think the search for meaning is something that really sort of troubles me and drives me. And it's a big thing in my lyrics, actually. I know that's not the question you asked particularly, but, you know.
But you are, you say you're not a religious person, but are you a spiritual person, or do you define the difference? You know, do you like the old incense, or do you have candles around the bath, that kind of thing?
No, I mean, I wasn't brought up with any of that. Like, the most we had was singing the Lord's Prayer at assembly. It just wasn't in my family at all. But I suppose I am sort of spiritual in the sense that, only in the sense that, you know, I do feel like there's a missing answer, really, and I wish I had something that was more sort of comforting. You know, I would find comfort in faith, but like I was saying, I think faith goes beyond, you know, logic and the intellect, but I just don't, it's not in me, you know, and I wish it was, but so I do have an interest in, you know, things that are like the search for meaning, I suppose, and I really like Bergman films because they're all about, you know, they seem to be about a loss of faith and a search for what replaces that. So I do find it difficult because I've never really lived much of a, you know, traditional conventional lifestyle. Yeah. So I just feel always at odds, you know, and in the margins somehow.
How does it make you feel that people might find your music spiritual? You know, I love my music, and there are certain bands that I like, and they do take me to places that nothing else seems to do that. And I'm sure people who follow you will do that for that very reason. Is that satisfying for you, or?
Amazing, that, isn't it? If anyone has that reaction, I mean, that's kind of what you dream of, really. I mean, whatever my sort of desert island albums might be, I want that. I want my albums to have that place in other people's lives. Whenever I do get people say to me quite often that this song or that song is particularly special to them. And on this tour in particular, I really, for the first time, I think there's an audience that really know particularly my album Hinterland. And so I look out and see people singing along to every word, and that just blows me away, actually. It's amazing, because that's what, I just want my music to just be part of somebody else's life. And if it brings people meaning in that way, in the way that music brings me meaning, well, that's an amazing achievement.
Yeah. Julia, I think what I like about your music is it's quite difficult to pigeonhole. You know, it kind of, I feel that, you might tell me I'm completely wrong, but, you know, it's got sounds of different genres, and I really like that. How would you describe it?
Well, I think, you know, for lots of different reasons, there's kind of quite big gaps between my albums, but what that kind of means is that I can really go deeply into each album. And I think that there's definitely a sort of through line through all three of them, but, you know, Nerve Up is definitely my more sort of, you know, guitar or very guitar post-punk oriented sort of jerky, jangly Gang of Four sort of Peter Buck influenced. You know, Hinterland, I think, is in some ways my favorite album because it really contains so many ideas. And then, you know, I started to branch out in terms of the instrumentation, and, you know, dance and funk elements. I've always loved those. But then, like Former Things, I really wanted to write with using a sequencer and analog synths, and I really wanted to go into the hardware electronic world. So I think each album kind of leans into, it's kind of like post-punk sort of dance funk, dance, and then electro, you know. So I think there's like a journey across all three albums, really.
Yeah. Who are you listening to as a young lady, Julie? Who are you following?
Well, I mean, I think R.E.M. had a big impact on me as a sort of young teenager. That was the first band that made, particularly Michael Stipe, where I just saw something really magical in you know, it's sort of surrounding the music. And as soon as I heard them and saw their videos, and I just really connected with it, and I felt like, oh, that's it, you know, that's the way to be an artist, you know. And I think that was just quite a, well, I was already, you know, I was always a very creative person. I was always drawing and painting from as a young kid. That was the first thing that I used to do. And but when I saw R.E.M., it was like I just really connected with them, sort of visually as well.
And your road into the industry, Julie, was it quite transient? Did it go well, or was there a lot of setbacks? Or just for people who don't know, how did that evolve for you?
Yeah, I did a fine art degree, and then I started sort of recording things at home on a little four-track, Tascam four-track studio, and I was making my own CDRs and making all the inlay sleeves and, you know, really putting my all into that sort of packaging, really. And I was sending these physical CDRs out to record labels, just really old school, you know. But I was also making a point of trying to play London a lot, because, you know, whether rightly or wrongly, that's where a lot of labels are based. And I knew I'd have a better chance of getting someone to come and see me, which is what happened. A guy called Jason White was really instrumental in making things happen for me, really. And once Steve Beckett from Warp had seen me and heard my music and met me, he just went for it, and that happened quite quickly. But, you know, the lead up to that was, you know, gradual. And then, yeah, like I have, for lots of quite complicated reasons, really, you know, there's been quite big gaps between records. But, you know, I'm kind of, the three albums I've got, I do think are lasting, you know.
And in terms of your musicianship, you're an accomplished musician. I was wondering how open you are to outside forces, to producers and other people getting involved. I was chatting to Jonathan Higgs from Everything, who I think on their last album they've kind of done it themselves from start to finish. Are you receptive to outside influence? Do you take criticism well, or how are you in that regard?
I think it really just comes down to, that's the way I've always done it. I've always, you know, played all the instruments and layered up the song from start to finish, and it's a really painterly process for me, and I can't conceive of doing it a different way. It's just the way it's my makeup, you know, it's the way I'm built, and it doesn't really interest me having the idea of somebody else doing a bit of the song. I almost can't really understand it, and so, you know, I'm just this is my sort of process, really. And then most of my music is made in total isolation, so I don't send them out for anyone to hear or give their opinions on. I just don't see the point of it. Because, you know, I think you just got to go for it yourself. And I've got once I start working on a song, it's got its own life, it's got its own momentum, and I just have to get it finished. And it's really hard work. It's really hard work. And I think it would be a lot more fun to be in a band. but that's not the way I'm made. So I can't really see that changing anytime soon. And I just think, you know, I present the finished work when it's done, and then it's all or nothing, you know. So, I, you know, criticism doesn't really come into it, you know, because I'm, you know, I scrutinize it myself. Nobody scrutinizes it more than me. So by the time I present it to the world, it is what it is, you know, for better or worse. So, oh, you've gone silent.
Hey, I was wondering, Julie, how you judge success, you know, in a time where, you know, there's not a huge amount of money in making music, is there? And you know, and so I don't want to insult you by suggesting that money's your driving force, because I'm sure it isn't. But what do you judge success in regards to being a musician?
Well, I feel successful creatively, but not really that much in any other sense of the word. I mean, I'm completely skint. I think money is too much of a taboo topic, and I think there's just this whole dynamic of everyone having to pretend all the time that everything's brilliant, like it's shameful to admit that you're skint or whatever. Well, I am, you know, and I think it's really hard for people who aren't necessarily well off to make music and sustain themselves. You know, it's, you know, I could talk for 4 hours about the sort of crazy economics of trying to make this thing work, really. You know, yes. So I feel definitely a sense of satisfaction artistically, but I would say my career and success has definitely been marred by practical factors, and by which I mean financial factors. I've never really had a proper studio as such, or a stable studio, or a stable income. And I've also had a change of management with each album, and all these things mean the whole infrastructure breaks down. And between each album, I've almost had to build myself and the infrastructure almost back up from scratch again. And it's exhausting, you know. Mm. So, you know.
I'm so glad that you've been so honest about that, Julie, because I've been fortunate to interview musicians who were around at a time where vinyl was the rich source of income, and musicians and bands made some decent money. Is it a frustration for you that you're skint, that you've put this creative energy into your art, and you know your skint? Does it piss you off?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality is, you know, I'm not a machine, and I'm not Superwoman either. And you actually can't. There are many, many times, including right now, where I feel like I just can't go on. You know, that's the reality behind all the social media posts. You know, I've had loads of great things happen. I'm not black. You know, I'm absolutely really aware of, and really, really happy about all the brilliant things that, you know, I've been doing, and there's lots and lots of great memories and acclaim, but acclaim doesn't pay my rent, or it doesn't quite pay it. Pays a bit of it, but not enough. No, yeah, I don't have to say about it. It's awful. It's exhaust. It's awful to come off 18 months of you know, constant work, which has been great, but it's not like I can rest on my laurels or go to my holiday home in Tuscany. Do you know what I mean? I'm just straight back into bam, right? Yeah. Gotta find some money. What are you gonna do? And you know, I've got the additional problem of you know, I've sort of been on the margins in a way of society for so long that I can't reintegrate back. So it's not just a matter of going and getting an office job or something for a couple of months. I just can't function like that. So it's, that's where I am now. I'm sort of thinking, okay, well, what comes next? And you have to, well, people in my situation who aren't necessarily well off, you know, class comes into it, absolutely. I have to sort of invent myself again. you know.
And does that force the creative process, Julie? Because
it really kills it. Like I think this idea that hardship is some kind of that cliched idea that it gives you something to sort of like some grain to push against is utter shit, because it's all it does is drain you. Mm. I'd love to be working on a record right now, but I don't have the luxury of doing that right at the minute. I don't have a studio. I don't have, yet again, everything's kind of in fragments really. So it's,
So what does the future hold, Julie? How do you know what's next?
Well, that's kind of what I have to invent again, as I have previously. So I have to have faith in myself that I'll find a way, and I will. I don't want to give the impression that I don't have any support. That's not true. It's just, very, very difficult.
Yeah.
Quite a lot of the time. But I've had, I'm literally just come to a grinding halt after, 18 months of like really focused activity. So, it'll be a while before, the soil has to lie fallow for a while,
Yeah. And while it lies fallow, what things are intriguing you about future writing? Is the political situation or, the pandemic is that a rich harvest for new writing, do you feel? Or do you think you'll explore other things?
Yeah, I've never been political in my writing. I think everything I do is very political with a small p, in the sense that I'm a woman who writes everything. I've engineered a lot of my own music and mixed a lot of it. I mean, I do, I write, I perform it, produce it. I drive everything. And I think that's a really positive thing, and actually still felt relatively rare thing. But I shut off from it really, because I don't really relate to, I don't really believe in any of it really. And I feel pretty sort of powerless actually. So I don't engage with it, which maybe isn't the right response, but I just sort of retreat into my imagination, which is sort of my job,
Yeah.
So I don't know what comes next. I think, I suppose I'm lucky in the sense that I am driven, in the sense I never feel like I have writer's block. I'm going to touch wood because I don't want to jinx it now, but something will come. But I don't have the luxury right now of thinking, what's the next album going to be?
Mm.
Got lots of practical factors to sort out, and that's, the reality of this particular musician's life,
As a fan of music, Julie, I find it quite a sad indictment that's where you are, that you are, I don't want to blow smoke up the proverbial, but you're a very talented musician, and I've really, really enjoyed listening to what I've been listening to. And, I think it's just a sad indictment of the music industry that musicians of your calibre are struggling. But I think it needs to be heard and it needs to be said, because, somebody's making some money somewhere, and it's been directed in the right places.
No, again, I'm really pained to, don't want to give the impression I'm not being supported or anyone's doing anything wrong by me, but it's just, it is the system, and it is the, I can't change it. And it's quite complex the way money trickles through the industry, and unfortunately the artist is the last person, and by the time it's trickled through its various channels, literally got a tiny little drop. It's a catch-22, because that situation has directly fed into the gaps between my records, whereas if I was able to just put things out a bit more and build the momentum, because the momentum kind of drops each time. And I, like I said, I have to sort of build it all up from scratch again because of all these sort of practical factors, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a, I've got lots of things to be proud of and happy about, but it's pretty exhausting and draining to just be so, you know, where I am at sort of financially.
And to try and to bring a more positive end to the proceedings, I've really enjoyed talking to you. I could talk to you all day, but have you got shows lined up for the rest of the year? What is a bit of a breather and then back out, or?
Yeah, I mean, I've kind of just this last month, we sort of finished on a last hurrah with a string of support dates with Primal Scream, which was absolutely brilliant. And then the last show was Blue Dot, which was an amazing high. So really that marks the end formally of the whole sort of chapter of former things, really. So there are bits and pieces in the future, but I really am just now just reflecting on all that and figuring out what comes next.
Julie, I'd say I've loved chatting to you, and thank you for the music that you have produced, and I send you my best wishes for what comes next, and I'll be very keen, and certainly hope to get along and see you live. There's nothing better as a fan of music than a live gig, and I really look forward to trying to catch up with you at some point. So, Julie, thanks ever so much for coming on the Godcast. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me. Bye.